My name is Ryan Riley, and you're listening to the Star Third Ward Podcast. This podcast is designed to help the members of our ward family come closer together by capturing their stories. We have this amazing opportunity to sit with probably some of the most incredible people that I've met in a while, Pat and Deanne Thomas, and my good friend Shane is with me today. We are in the home of the Thomases, and for those of you who don't know, Pat is the fun little man that comes and brings flowers every Sunday and takes pride in helping our sacrament meeting be beautiful. And as I have watched him and started to learn more about him, every time something comes up, I'm more and more amazed. And Deanne and I have had a couple conversations, and I'm just amazed at the two of you. You've lived beautiful, rich lives. You have 5 children. We just met your son, one of your sons. Was that your oldest?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So we just met your oldest son, and you have how many grandchildren?
13?
14. 14. 14 grandkids.
14 grandkids. Uh-huh. How long have you lived in the ward?
It'll be 4 years in June.
4 years in
yeah.
June.
Yeah, we moved right in the middle of the pandemic, and mm-hmm. we had church for a few times, and then we had almost a year and a half. We didn't have any meetings at all. So no.
That's hard. That was hard. It was hard for everybody, especially moving in and trying to connect and meet new people.
It was really challenging. Very, very challenging. Kind of felt like we were like here just on a bed and breakfast or something. We were going to go home some point.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that was one of our many miracles, in the fact that I'd hired a mover from Montana to drive 2 U-Hauls down here, and he had severely underestimated the time it would take to load and unload and enough space. So we got to the end of the loading, and we still had the half a trailer to go. So I brought the trailer down, and he communicated with me. He says, "Well, Mr. Thomas, we've got a plane that leaves at 2:00 on Saturday, and we arrive Saturday morning at like 7 a.m. I said, "Well, what are you saying, Scott? What are you saying?" He said, I said, "I'll make some calls. Maybe I can find some help. I found my son lives there." And so, long story short, we arrived at the U-Haul, started unloading. Within a matter of 15 minutes, we had 15 people.
We did. Yeah. This ward had 15 people show up in the middle of, June of the pandemic at our home to unload us and get us in here.
Wow. And the movers said, "This is a miracle. I've never seen a miracle like this."
He did.
That's what I love about the ward. I love that, for people that give it a chance, there's so much help. There's so much there's so much service. There's so much opportunity, and everybody takes advantage of that.
They do.
But I want to get into a story, an experience that the two of you had that I don't know that how many people in the ward know about it. Now, Pat, tell us a little bit about your background and what you've done, and how that led to this incredible experience.
That's a really good point, in the fact that I was attending Boise State University back in the 70s, and where I met Deanne, and she went to visit her brother at Oregon State campus, and how separation causes the heart to grow fonder. That worked for me, so I went to visit her and got to tour around the campus. Just fell in love with the campus, such a beautiful campus. I decided I'd go in one of the buildings, see what's like inside the forestry building, because I worked as a wildland firefighter. I thought, well, maybe I want to go into forestry. I went in the building, and there was a big room full of drafting tables, and these guys doing all kinds of artwork types things. I said, "Hey, what are you guys doing here?" And one of the young men, who was a senior at the time, he said, "Well, are you interested?" I said, "Yeah, what are you doing?" He says, "Well, we're students in landscape architecture, and we're working on projects of parks and some restoration projects." I said, "It looks like a lot of artwork." He says, yeah, it helps to be artistic." And he gave me the missionary spiel in about 15 minutes. He says, "Well, if you're really interested, here's the name of the professor. His building office is downstairs in this building." And so the next day I went to see him, and his name is Charles de Duerder, and he says, "Well, if you're interested, I can help
help you if you want to sign up and register here.
So you started to study landscape architecture, and you did that for that's been your career.
Yes.
And you worked in the forestry department?
Before I moved into landscape architecture.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a wildland firefighter.
And then what did you do? You worked at some of the national parks as well as a landscape architect.
After graduation, I worked on the Uinta National Forest in Utah. And after that, in the late 70s, I was hired by the Flathead Forest in Montana, which is up by Glacier Park. And I worked there for a number of years, and Glacier Park offered a job, and I was selected for that job as a landscape architect. In all places, Glacier National Park.
So then how did that pivot? Because before this amazing experience that we're going to get in and start talking to, before that, how did you end up working for the church and the temple in Oregon?
I was on a term contract with the national parks. And that term ended after 5 years in 2013. And I was... just looking for things to do. And I contacted the church landscape architect in Salt Lake and said, hey,
Kevin,
I'm a landscape architect. I'm looking for some volunteer projects. I'd like to give back to the church. And that was a phone message to him. He never got back to me. So I called him again. He says, well, it sounds interesting. Why don't you send me your resume? I sent my resume. He responded right away. He says, wow, this is the most amazing resume I've seen for a long time. He said, I wish I could claim some of your projects.
And then fast forward,
we met with him in the fall of 2013, and he said, come on down. I'd like to visit with you face to face. And we met him in his office, and he says, you know what? Before you got here just yesterday, I didn't have anything that I thought would be worthy of your talents. And yesterday afternoon, three historians came to me, church historians, said, hey, we've got a project at Martin's Cove. We need to know what to do about it. It's the streamside sloughing off, and it looks pretty ratty. And so that next day, I show up, and they ask me about if I had any experience with streamside restoration. I said, well, I've done this. And the more I talked about it, the more their antennas went off.
Wow.
And Pat has done design work, large urban design work as well. And then they started thinking what they wanted to do with Nauvoo, and they asked him, can you come in with us on that and help us do master plan?
I got back up because we kind of brought that discussion to a close, and then Stephen Smith, the head historian, said, well, I think we need to talk as a group after you take off. He says, in fact, would you mind going to Martin's Cove on your way home to Montana? Martin's Cove was only 9 hours this way.
Right? On your way, right?
On your way.
Oh, my goodness. And so then just what projects? So you worked on Martin's Cove.
Yeah.
And did you work in Nauvoo?
Well, the church has put together a major restoration, the kind
master
of
plan.
Master plan, the way it was back in the beginnings of Nauvoo.
And they really are doing that. I mean, grasses and trees and everything. And so they gave Pat the great big huge thing.
So I was asked to help rewrite the plan, master plan for Nauvoo.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And were you part of the implementation at Nauvoo or just the planning?
Just the plan.
Just the planning.
Because then we went on to other things.
Yeah.
So... So then what else have you done that led you to this amazing project that I'm being kind of aloof because I want that to be a grand story as we get into it, but.
So about 2013, probably around Christmas time, a man by the name of Jim Fenn made a presentation about senior missionary opportunities. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And just about the same time, another landscape architect friend had volunteered service at a temple in Australia. And so those seeds were planted in my mind about doing some kind of church volunteer service or a mission. And Deanne was, by 2014, she was really pushing about some kind of a mission. And I was, I'm not sure. I like what I'm doing here. We can do a mission here. And then 2014, wasn't it? Christmas break, I ran into Jim Finn at Costco parking lot. And I said, "Hey, Jim, I remember your presentation you made about senior service and senior missionary opportunities." I said, "What are you doing now?" He said, "Oh, I'm working on a temple in Rome." I said, "Really? We have a temple in Rome?"
Pat said, obviously hadn't listened real closely to President Monson's announcement.
You weren't one of the ones that shouted it from the rooftops.
And he told me about the project. I said, "Wow, that's four major buildings, and you've got all these connecting pieces and parts. Who's pulling all the landscape and the sidewalks and the roadway? Who's bringing all that together?" He says, "That's a really good question. We need some help." I said, "Well, that's kind of what I do. Not exactly to that scale, but I've worked everything from residential to national parks." And he says, "Send them, here's the names, contact names, dust off a resume, send it in." And I had a appointment for an interview in 2 weeks.
So then you tell a little bit about the Rome Temple and what was your responsibility. Like, so you went in and you talked to him and they gave you the job and you were on site.
Yes. So I was the ground superintendent, everything related to landscape, plants, trees, and shrubs. That was my responsibility. And I reported directly to the project, to the director of the project.
Wow. And then Dan, how did you come in to the project? Because you guys worked there together.
We did.
You were the only married couple on the project 24/7, basically.
That's correct.
So how did you come into the project? And then let's talk about some of the experiences.
Well, they
you guys
asked for my resume also. And so I submitted my resume. And
So Dan, your background has been in public relations.
It has. And yes.
Community involvement and working with charities. I mean, that's your jam.
It has, and then I've had a big chunk of that that's been in conjunction with writing large grants, federal grants, those kinds of things as well. So I've had this big federal grant kind of side to my work as well, because usually I was doing that. And then I got into the university system, and those two things melted there, my public relations. And
wow.
So anyway.
So you guys became the dynamic duo. Working
the team
working to help the Rome Temple come together.
Yes. We did with some other really great people. And there were a few of us on that site that were there every day that were members of the church. But any given day, we'd have 150 to 300 men there. And of course, none of them were members. So often it was really an interesting project. Of kind of guiding this whole huge project. It really was, even though you have architectural plans and things like that, just plain guiding a project this size. It's 17 acres and four very large buildings and huge expectations of what this is going to do.
Well, you could imagine.
The expectation level was just off the map.
When the prophet announced the Rome Temple, instantly, everybody had expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Like, before anything was even said or set, or everybody was like, a temple in Rome? Expectations went through the roof. And so managing that to completion and...
20 minutes to the Vatican.
Wow.
20 minutes to the Vatican. Yeah. That's close.
Yeah. So it came with a huge package. The temple had already been under construction at this point for 7 years. Well, 6 years when we got there. And there were a lot of challenges. There were a lot of issues, and we weren't even close to being halfway completed, not even close. So there was just a lot of work that needed to be done, and there were six other specialists that were called from the United States along with Pat. And we all had a charge. We all had a charge when we went there, and they were very clear about that.
I need to. You asked a really good question. What led up to your involvement in Rome? It is actually before I even thought about college or even high school graduation. My dad served World War II, and he was there for Liberation Rome, June of 44.
The day.
Wow.
He marched into Rome the day with the company in the first wave that liberated
Rome. We have a picture of him at the Rome Colosseum in June of 44. And we have a picture of Deanna and I at the same place.
I just got goosebumps. That, like, 72 years later, right, you have the opportunity to be a part of the establishment of the Rome Temple. What a beautiful experience.
During my interview with Corey Carl, the Director of International Construction, it was going on for probably an hour and a half, and I said, these words just popped out of my mouth. I said, Brother Carl, you need to know this. We wouldn't even be here talking about a Rome Temple wouldn't it have been for people like my dad.
No.
He said, what do you mean? I said, my dad served here in Rome, Italy. He helped liberate
for
Rome.
For 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said, wow, I think we need to hire you.
Wow.
That's the right answer.
Isn't it? How amazing is that? Okay, so you've talked about challenges. You talked about problems. Every project.
It does.
Every project has problems. I mean, nothing goes to plan. In any business, in any environment, in family, in everything, nothing ever goes to plan. And you really have to learn how to pivot and move.
You do.
And how to adapt and how to bring things together to make it work, right? What were some of the challenges, Pat, that you were faced with that were some of the cool things that overcame that you didn't expect? Like seeing the Lord's hand involved in the work that you did.
Oh, probably the thing that comes to the memory I have is that I was not totally buying into the landscape plan. It wasn't my plan. And there were some features in that I thought, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. For instance, the plan called for 4 large olive trees in the piazza, the plaza. And the plaza was broken up into 4 piazzettas, small patios. And the center feature was these big, ugly olive trees, and they had cast no shade. They dropped the olives onto the travertine, and they make the mess. And I prayed about that. I said, is this really what we want here? And so I was pouring cold water on it to the people that can make choices and decisions. And I was called into the office to give my thoughts about it. And so that very next weekend, there was a garden south of Rome that I studied in college. And I saw that sign. Wow, that's the place we studied about. And so I went to that place, and the gate was locked. And there was a speaker there, and pushed the button so I could send my very best Italian, I want to come in and see your gardens. He said, sorry, we're closed, in English. He understood I was not talented in Italian. I said, well, I came all the way from the United States of America. I'm working on a project in Rome. Please let me come in. I need to see your garden. He says,
And so you got in.
And he let me in, and he was actually expecting, I introduced myself as a landscape architect. He was expecting an architect to talk to him about a project. So he got a little confused thinking I was the architect. But I came in and he said, oh, are you the architect? I said, well, I'm a landscape architect. He said, well, introduced to my wife. And she said, well, we'll do a special tour for you. And so it was a late afternoon. I walked around the corner with the tour guide. And here were a row of these olive trees with the sunlight cascading through it and these roses beneath the olive trees. This is just heavenly. I get the message, okay, sorry. I realized that there was some real imagination and wisdom on those olive trees. And so fast forward, we brought in these olive trees from north of Rome, north of Florence, and
we went out and looked at so many olive trees.
These trees had this huge box around them.
Yeah.
And so we had a crane available. So the crane reached over the top of the nearby building, picked the olive tree, and brought it over where it needs to be. And the Italians just saw that, and they just like, It was like the Pledge of Allegiance. Everybody's, they were just awestruck. Wow. Seeing those olive trees fly into their
place. But what was so beautiful, I think, is that people were so honored that we would want, because they needed to look very similar. They're all over 300 years old. Yeah. And they needed to look, and they were so honored to have had these olive trees selected, you know, to come on this site. But Pat, I think one of the most beautiful experiences you had was how you came to the huge, the nursery that you selected and working with.
Francesco?
Yes, Francesco. I think you just briefly would tell about that. That was such an answer to prayer.
Good one to end. My charge was to find the landscape contractor, and Italy had been through since 2008, and really they didn't recover. And so here we are eight years later, and the landscape industry was kind of not so impressive. And so I thought about it, prayed, but what am I going to do for a landscape contractor? And so I contracted the nursery up there in Pistoia, which is near Florence. And they said, well, here's a couple names we'd recommend. So I went back to the office in Rome and I made some calls, and this man named Alessandro said, I'm interested in the project. I worked through his daughter and Sarah and invited them to come down for an interview. And so they came down, and I said, you make sure you have somebody that speaks good English, because I think we need to have really good communication. And so I had this script I went by, and then I just had this thought come to my mind. So, Mr. DeFrancesco,
Pat, I need to just say, the landscaping companies that Pat had worked with, we had interviewed, and I've been on two or three of the interviews, we've gone out to see their projects, et cetera. These are world class. When they ship all over the world. Right, right. I mean, this is not... I don't mean this badly, but it's not somebody's, you know, tomatoes out and somebody, yeah, I mean, these right, are right. Beautiful, world-class.
Hundreds of acres. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Anyway.
So I invited him to come down, and we met in the construction trailer. I had the room to myself, and I just felt impressed to ask Mr. DeFrancesco, why is it you want this job? Why are you interested in this job? It's 4 hours from your shop, from your home, from your office. And the daughter says, Daddy, he wants to know why you want this job. And she spoke in Italian. He said very softly, because I want to please God. I said, what'd you say? Because I want to please God. Oh, I said, okay, interview you.
Wow.
That's
wow.
And there were just some very pivotal moments like that. And then I think about when, you know, you found Albino, that were just incredibly important for this project to move forward.
Right. The right people coming together at the right time, being directed by the Lord to be able to make his house beautiful.
I'd like to just tell one little fast story on Pat. They came to him, and all of a sudden there had to be this, 30-foot retaining wall at the west end of, the west side of the project, and the city was just giving, I mean, just these couple of days, and they wanted it, and the design, and John comes in, the director, and he tells Pat, you know, Pat says, this is a 2-month project. I mean, you've got to shoot everything, you've got to have all this correct, you've got to get all your drainage right, anyway, Pat just, he just prayed so earnestly. And at that point, we were sharing an office. I had another person in there with me, but Pat and I were sharing. We didn't always, but at this point, because we moved frequently on a, as you can imagine, construction site. And there was an aura about him that it was like lightning fast. He just knew what to do, how to proceed, where to get the information, who could get that. And in 2 days, he had a project, honestly, that was at least a 4 or 5 week project.
I will later.
I would just share that one other. I mean, there were some others that were just amazing like that, But that one was so such a tall order for the amount of time. Yeah. And yet it was going to hold everything up if they didn't have it. I mean, it was just holding up all kinds of things that had to be done. If this is, you know, if we didn't have an approval on this.
I never thought about this, but you caused me to think of Eliza Snow when she wrote some of the hymns. I just grabbed the pen and the words just started to flow.
Yeah.
Or Nephi building a boat.
Yes.
He knew exactly what to do. And he didn't build it in the construction of man.
Right.
He built it under the Lord's construction. I mean, we read about it in the Book of Mormon, and you lived it through that experience.
Yeah, it was.
What was it like from a PR standpoint, like dealing with you? Because you said earlier there was immense church leadership that came through, mm-hmm. and you were in charge of those events.
Helping with a lot of that.
How was that? I mean, what? Like, you know they're coming, and you know who's coming, and they're apostles and prophets and 70s and leadership galore. What was that like?
At first, it was nerve-wracking. You know, in the beginning, I mean, you're going to... The very first person that came when I was there was President Nelson, only he was not the president of the church. He would be in another year, 2 years, but he wasn't at that point. And I can remember just, you know, what do we want to have the, you know, and then we started settling back and saying, really, Heavenly Father, what do you want us?
Yeah.
What does this need to be like? What should we have ready and prepared? How should this be for him? And we became much more aware and in tune with that. Yes, did we spiffy things up? Sure, we did. Did we clean things up and make sure that things were in good order and that he could be dropped off in the circle and that's inside of the. But it became much more about what. What would you want us to do while he's here?
Wow.
What's really important for us to do for the day we have him here or the afternoon or whatever that is? I would just share one experience with you. When Elder Anderson came, he came late in the afternoon. And we had had a couple of big challenges, and I can't go into those here, but you're kind of aware of a couple of them. And he went up into the temple. And of course, remember, all of this is a construction site. When we're talking about going up in the temple, you're going up scaffolding.
Right.
Yeah, you're going up in, at one point that we finally had one of those temporary elevators that you could do this with, and kind of hoist yourself up. But he wanted to go up so he could see the site. We went up to the second floor. And there's no way he could have known. There is no way he could have known, as a man, a really huge stumbling block. There's nothing. There's no way. And he said, I feel impressed to give an apostolic blessing. And there were only six people there. And he was just spot on. Spot on. The words that came from his mouth made such a difference for all of us that were working there. And some people who needed to hear that were there too. And it would have been rare to have had those two people in that room there as well. It was just... We just had some amazing experiences like that. And there was something then at that point that there was like this, just this huge breath of these wonderful leaders. They come here with angels in the wings. We need them here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We would need them and want them here. And it was after that, he was probably about the third that came after I was there. it was just like, we could not wait for them to come.
Wow.
Yeah.
So fast forward, all the hard work, all the challenges, everything's done, and you get to stand in the grounds that you created, were a part of executing the vision that was given to you. What did that feel like when it was done?
We were invited to both open houses and dedication. It was such a feeling of, wow, awesome.
I think, you know, we hear in the scriptures, you know, words cannot say and tongue cannot tell. I think all of us have had a few experiences like that in our life, and words are just so inadequate. There just aren't any words. But the joy and the gratitude of the people that live in that region, it's overwhelming.
Another important point, you asked about what was the catalyst, factors that led up to this.
Yeah.
I was a member of the church for maybe 3 months, and I had a patriarchal blessing. And just right within a month or two of us moving to Corvallis, Oregon. And Grant Blanche was the patriarch. And his first words out of his mouth, you are the architect of your soul. I thought, wow, that's amazing. He used the right words, and such a driven, impressive statement. And it went on to the latter part of the blessing. He said, you will have the opportunity to lay your handiwork at the footsteps of the Lord. I brought that back to Corey Carl at the dedication. I showed him, I said, where else in this world would that statement be more true?
Wow.
He said, you're right.
Mm.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
It's incredible.
What an amazing experience. And what an opportunity for us to get to know you more.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to both of you. Thank you that you take this time. It brings back the most beautiful, hard, good, wonderful. It's kind of like raising a family to a certain extent, you know, it's the best and it's still the hardest. And it's just and it's what makes it so rich.
Have you gone back?
We've been back three times. We did have something wonderful happen. And I think it's because we served together there, but we had already been to the contractor's open house in January. And then the church contacted us. It's a woman from the church headquarters, and she says, I have instructions to let you know that the church would like to bring you back over for the dedication.
Wow.
And we...
That's a real keepsake to see those tickets.
Yeah.
With our name on tickets.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So I just we're still in contact with several of the Italian people that we worked with, and it is just so true that God loves every one of his children. He's calling them. He wants them back. And the joy that was in the... It's hard to be LDS there. It's hard. And I just so grateful for that experience. It's just a whole new way to understand our church and the gospel of Jesus Christ and what it brings to people's lives.
Thank you for tuning in to the Star Third Ward podcast. We're so grateful you chose to spend your time with us today. If you have any questions or comments about what you've heard, please don't hesitate to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners and value your thoughts and feedback.